Hi, I am Krista Bender, also known as AV Krista, and you are listening to AV Power Up on Rave Radio.
Hi, this is the Mad Sound Guy, Chuck Espinoza, and both of you, count them, one, two, are listening to us on Rave Radio, the AV Power Up crew.
Only two listeners, jeez.
Hi, I'm Stacey Kringlin at Vadio Stacey, and you are listening to AV Power Up.
Hi, I'm Hope Roth at Beer and Pie, and you are listening to AV Power Up.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Rich Prevetti. Look for me at Rich Prevetti. And thank you, AV Power Up, for bringing me back two for two.
And this is Jeremy Caldera at Jeremy _ Caldera here on AV Power Up.
And I'm Corey Moss at CB Moss on the Twitters, Corey Moss on the interwebs. And you are listening to AV Power Up on Rave Pubs Radio with your host, our host, everybody's host, Krista Bender. Take it away, Krista.
Wow, I'm everybody's host now?
Everybody's host.
Wow, that's a lot.
You're a hostess with the mostest.
Isn't she?
I'm pretty sure that's written on a bathroom wall somewhere. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in for another AV Power Up. I want to quickly thank our sponsor. As you've noticed, I've been doing a really good job of thanking them up front because I will forget once we start talking to our cool guests that we have tonight. So thank you to Ingram Micro. Visit ingrammicro.com, and you can find out how they can help you with your EV and IT needs. So tonight we have two guests, and I'm going to introduce both of them, and then we'll let the mayhem begin and see who can talk first. So the first guest...
Is it a contest for who gets to talk first?
Yes, who can buzz in first.
Oh, okay, this should be good.
The first guest is TJ Adams.
Yes,
TJ Adams. And the second guest is Julian Phillips.
Thank you both.
Yes,
very good.
Thanks, Krista.
Oh, TJ was first to buzz in.
I talked first.
Does he win? Does he win a prize?
He does win a prize.
Oh, okay. We'll let him know later, right?
Yet to be determined, yes.
Yet to be determined.
Is it a jingle?
Oh, it could be a jingle of his very own. Wow. Hope sings.
Yes, she does a jingle.
And she springs eternal. Yes. TJ Adams and Julian Phillips. And I hope floats, right.
So both gentlemen we have on the show tonight are pretty fantastic. They've been in the AV industry for a while. They have pretty cool backgrounds, or I think they're pretty cool backgrounds. The coolest thing about TJ is at some point he worked at the Tucson Airport Authority, and I just think that's so cool. I don't know. Saying you worked at an airport, I think that's awesome, no matter what you did.
I think it was...
No matter how boring.
Yes.
Said something about sniffing luggage.
Yeah. And Julian is pretty cool because I just found out that he lives somewhat near me. He's in the Philadelphia area.
I am indeed. And where are you, Krista?
Well, I live closer towards Reading, but I work closer towards King of Prussia.
Okay. Okay. So I'm in Westchester area.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
Soon to be moving also at the end of August. So I've got boxes around me right now in that whole process. I'm being packed up as we speak.
Nice.
Don't worry, I'm not running away. Still staying in the area.
Okay, good. I was going to say, I just met you and you're already moving.
That's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I find out that we live close to each other.
Oh, well, why don't you two meet before you go?
Yeah, maybe you'll want to stay in Westchester.
Maybe
it's a shame. I used to work in Westchester, but no longer. So, what is cool about Julian as well, besides that he lives in Westchester and will now be leaving there, so he is a board director for the Global Presence Alliance, and he's also the executive vice president. Oh my gosh, I can't speak. Executive Vice President at Whitlock.
Don't vapor lock on us, Krista.
I know, I'm already stroking out.
And by the way, my other unpaid role is that I'm also on the board of Infocom as well. So I end up doing a lot of stuff for free. as you guys do too.
That's so true. We don't get paid to do this.
That's a lot. That's got to keep you very busy, Julian.
Yeah, definitely.
But all those cool trips, Julian. You know Deb Britton and Joe Pham, I'm sure, and they're always talking about where they're headed next, so that can't be all bad.
I will be with both of them next week on a fab trip, absolutely, so looking forward to that.
Great. Well, don't tell them any stories about our conversation, because they might kill me.
It's being recorded.
If you tell stories tonight, you know it's going to be listened to a whole lot of people. Wait, two or three, Krista? Two or three people.
For what? I'm sorry.
How many people listen to us now?
Hey, we're up to four.
My mom started listening.
Didn't you say nine when we, Chuck and I, you know, had our usual pre-AV power-up dinner? Didn't you say nine tonight?
I was exaggerating to make you feel better.
I walked out of that restaurant so happy. Now I was just totally
romantic.
Oh, wow. Well, now I hate you, but don't worry about it. No, Julian, go ahead. Tell a story, or TJ, you know, if there's a story to tell.
Story to tell. Well,
tell us the story of what brought you across the pond.
So I will have lived in the Westchester area now for getting on 5 years. And the reason I came over was because, first of all, for those of you that doubt it, the United States is still the most vibrant economy in the world. So that was one of the biggest reasons. I was CEO of a integrator in Europe called Impact. Doesn't actually exist anymore. It got bought and merged, but I have to tell you that, you know, for every day of effort and for every amount of expertise that you actually deployed in the UK, you would probably get a result of 10. And in the US, you can put in exactly the same amount of effort and get a result of 100. And I know that sounds a little bit cheesy to actually say that, but I don't think you actually truly understand the huge value that's in the US AV market. It's absolutely huge. I mean, you can just do things at a much bigger scale and have a much greater impact on what actually goes on here. So that's what drew me over, is the ability to play in a much bigger stage and to do much bigger things. And I haven't seen that demand, and I haven't seen that excitement in the market over here dull on any single day since I've been here in 5 years. Despite the fact that everyone will give you tales of woe and say it's not like the old days and all that kind of stuff, I don't see that one little bit. I actually just keep on seeing more and more opportunity every single day.
You know, it's an interesting take, Julian. You talk about, you know, them saying it's not like the old days. And I have to say, hearing something like that almost makes me pause every time I do, because does it seem like they want it to be like the old days, or they don't want to see the progress that's being made? You know, go to Infocom, see what's going on. Do you think that's a part of a problem?
I think it is part of a problem. You know, and I think that whenever I hear the words, it's not like the old days, it sends a shiver down my spine, because, you know, I think that there's been many amazing things that have happened in the AV industry over many, many years, but we just have to leave that behind, quite frankly, rather than keep on referring back to it as if it was some bygone age. The fact is, the opportunity we have ahead of us is 100 times bigger than anything we've known before. Mm. And I think we should be much more focused on the opportunity in the future and what that means. But also what it means for us as an industry and what it means for us as players in that industry. You know, and we'll talk a lot about some of these issues later in this podcast. But, you know, it isn't about going backwards. It is about going forwards. And it does mean that we have to look at things differently. We have to look at new ways of not only how the technology is actually going to be put together, but also new ways of how we go and do our business. And I think that every other industry segment out there is constantly reinventing itself. You know, I think the best example of that is what Apple did over the last few days and launched Apple Music. You know, a fundamental sort of understanding that people just do not want to buy and purchase a song anymore. They want to stream and they want to use subscriptions. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, because that fundamentally is going to happen in AV too. And we have to start getting used to the fact that whereas every other industry involved in technology in some shape or form has had to constantly reinvent itself. And so we have to just keep on accepting that that's our path, that's our journey. And we have to get comfortable with it, and we have to embrace it, and we have to grab hold of it.
Julian, I have a question as far as how technology may have changed for you in 2001. We had, of course, here, you know, 9/11, and that changed a lot of things here where it affected travel and pulled over into technology where it became sort of the leaping or starting point for telecommuting and people being able to work and do their jobs from home or from other locations. Did the same thing happen in Europe as well at that time, or was it did it take a little longer to catch on over there, or did it happen previously?
I think the European marketplace in many ways, having made that comment that I think the US does things on a much bigger scale and it's a bigger playground, I think in many ways there are parts of Europe where they're a lot more advanced and more creative in the use of AV technology than they probably are in the US. I'm not making a universal statement, but I have seen and witnessed the most incredible innovation within Europe. And I think part of that is that, you know, when you are in a more difficult market and you have to be more creative and you have to find value where probably value doesn't exist, it is the mother of invention. You know, it drives you to be creative. So in some aspects, I've actually seen slower adoption of technology in the US, even though it be on a much grander scale. And that's not universal. So I think there already was incredible innovation with AV prior to 9/11. And I think certain industry segments have actually taken on advanced use of AV technology in a way that I haven't yet seen in the US. I'll give you an example. Criminal justice. AV in criminal justice in Europe was established and almost universal 5-10 years ago. And yet we're only starting to see the extensive use of advanced AV and criminal justice here in the US. It's a big market and there's lots of opportunity, but you know, I would probably say it's a little bit far behind.
It's interesting to hear. It's interesting to hear Jillian talk about that. I think from an IT perspective, having been an ex-IT technologist working in management roles and being an end user as well as a vendor of IT products, I've always thought that the AV industry in general, and I mean this globally, is somewhat behind and. We call ourselves integrators, but I would say very disintegrated. A lot of artificial walls between product as well as, you know, interoperability not being a key focus. So it's interesting coming at it again, not from another, I guess, region of the world, but more of from a different industry perspective and looking at it and thinking, gosh, you know, it's not about, you know, we talk about AV and IT and it's to me, it's all the same. And I think most IT professionals you talk to, they don't make nearly the distinction we do between those two industries. So it's interesting having all of these fresh look at all of these issues in our space, I guess.
Go ahead, Julian. No,
just to build on what TJ said there, and I think this is a big debate that's going on right now, and I think this is something that we're going to have to come to terms with. We talk about an AV industry, and I think we have to fundamentally ask the question, are we an industry, or are we a subset, a very vibrant and important and wonderful subset of a broader, bigger technology market? You know, there used to be something called the telecoms industry. It doesn't exist anymore. What you actually have is you have a whole bunch of companies that have figured out how to deliver voice applications that sit on an IT network. And so we've got to be careful that we don't suddenly put ourselves into this category that we're this protected insular AV industry and we constantly have conversations about AV and IT. And I'm coming back to TJ's point, pretty much every single application that we provide now for our customers either can or should or does sit on an IT network. And I would certainly argue it definitely should sit on an IT network of some shape or form. And so from that perspective, you know, if we are to have this global relevance and we are to actually grow and develop this industry way beyond whatever has gone in the past, we probably have to accept that we are part of this much bigger IT community out there, but a very exciting and very important voice within that community. But we have to be clear about what that messaging is, and we have to be clear about what our value is too.
But Julian, wouldn't you say that there is, that's one of the bigger problems with AV integrators now, is they're still stuck in the world of AV. I think that a lot of them just don't want to change, and they're just going to have to. They should have already, right? I mean, AV is kind of a word that clients anymore seem to steer away from. It scares them, you know, but IT is something that everybody's comfortable with, you know? And I think that a lot of integrators, they need to just accept the fact that this has happened, that stuff needs to be on the IT network, and you need to not be your own in your own little world, like you're saying.
I agree, but I don't think it's just integrators. And by the way, I don't think integrators are in denial. I think the biggest problem is they just don't know what to do. Sure. And they probably don't either have the skills or the ability to actually make that change. But I don't think it's just integrators. I think it's manufacturers too. I think there's a whole slew of manufacturers out there that are actually in denial that they're actually part of the IT.
But, you know, one of the most interesting things I noticed about Infocom is, you know, a lot of people talked about this lack of innovation or this lack of new technology that was released by some of the manufacturers. And, you know, the one common theme I seem to notice was that the manufacturers, I think they're starting to gear up and prep for a services-based model like you see a lot in the IT world. I mean, we saw that with Crestron. We saw that with some things with Biamp. We saw that with some things going, you know, with a whole bunch of different manufacturers. And I just thought that was very interesting because I saw that everywhere as opposed to, you know, releasing new product. It's here's our new service. And oh, by the way, it's a recurring revenue.
Yeah, there are some that are taking a leadership position there. And I think you named a couple of them. Absolutely. And I think I'm sure TJ will tell us that QSC are doing exactly the same thing. And they are. And I think the reality is that there are a number of manufacturers that are beginning to ask themselves the question about what is their relevance in this bigger IT world out there. And what they see is much bigger opportunity and much bigger scale. One of the challenges in making that transition, of course, is that whole revenue substitution issue, is that whilst you are making boxes and you're selling boxes and you have a traditional channel, you also have a traditional revenue stream that keeps the lights on and keeps everyone paid. When you're trying to actually shift that to a different kind of model, a subscription-based model or a services model, sometimes you actually end up cannibalizing some of those revenues you already have, and it actually becomes a fairly difficult journey to actually navigate. So that's one of the fundamental challenges, I think, that not only manufacturers but also integrators have. You know, it used to be the time when if an organization wanted to invest in video conferencing, they would probably spend $1 million with us to actually put the infrastructure in to deliver the kind of quality that we're actually enjoying right now. Now you don't have to do that. And you can do that through a service that is actually delivered, you know, through someone's browser or through someone's link client. And so from that perspective, you know, some of that revenue substitution is an issue. And so you have to have a business model that enables you, whether you're a manufacturer or whether you're an integrator, to actually introduce and support those services, but you also have to make sure that it blends in with your other revenue streams, and you have to adjust your model accordingly. And it's tough for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I agree, Julian. I think from a manufacturer's perspective, one of the things that I think you'll also see reinvention is applications that are not necessarily always a cloud-based application or even a subscription service, but a lot of times we forget that we have multiple ways to get the same job done. So an example would be, yeah, a manufacturer is going to still build a box, you know, like QSC is going to continue making audio specific hardware because frankly, there's no other IT vendor out there that we could get off the shelf hardware for. So that's always going to be there, at least in the short term. But if you look at it, how you reinvent yourself and how you look at technology as sort of the savior of that that reinvention. Because you mentioned having to transition between a technology platform, in our case, or a revenue model, in the case of the integrator. Look at software. I mean, if you look at a software platform, it is a multi-targeted type of application. So that means I can run it on a dedicated piece of hardware that we make, or I can run it on an off-the-shelf Dell server that the IT folks are going to just provide. And so when you see that transition start happening with all of us manufacturers, where we start shifting our fundamental from purpose-built, box-built technologies to more software applications, I think that's going to be the next wave of our shift in our industry. And that's why I'm excited to be at QC, because we're leading some of that. And that helps you with your revenue model and helps you with your margins, because let's face it, hard fixed cost. Software has a lot bigger margin. So that's again, it doesn't always have to be about the cloud. I know we get kind of caught on that as an industry. We think about services and all of that, and that's great, but it can also be a sort of a quiet shift that can happen where the box looks exactly the same, but it's really a fundamental platform shift that gives you a lot more freedom to innovate and to continue making revenue and margin.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, I think one of the problems that a lot of the traditional integrators have is that the sort of the bar is so much higher now for what integration is. And it's not about, well, we're just going to sell you this box that we have, you know, some sort of exclusive deal to get. You know, you actually need to understand IT. You need to understand the network. You need to understand software. There's so many more things that you need to know and understand. And so the integrators that are going to thrive are the ones that can do that. They can help you bring all your systems together, make everything work. And then the people who just knew how to put boxes in and solder cables are the ones that are going to have problems. But I mean, I think, you know, first of all, there's all this great opportunity, and also you become more of a relevant part of someone's business model. I remember in 2008, you know, a lot of integrators had problems because people cut back on AV. And people cut back on IT, but not to that same level, where integrators had a lot of layoffs, not as many hires, and a lot of the IT companies did fine because they were part of what people needed to essentially do their jobs. And as you become more enmeshed in the general sort of technology sector, I think we're going to find that what we bring to the table is something that people are going to need, and I think it's going to make us more stable in the long run.
Well, case in point, Hope, is that, you know, I was running Impact in the UK in 2008, and although it was a tough year in many ways because of what was happening in the financial markets, we'd already shifted our business model towards a managed services model. And, you know, by 2008, about 25% of our top line revenue and 55% of our gross margin was actually coming from services, not from product or integration. And so that was actually what helped us to actually weather those particular financial storms. So again, this we've got to be careful as well, actually, not to go what I call guardrail to guardrail, by the way, on this particular discussion, which is bouncing from left to right, is I don't think we're going to come to a world where all the purpose-built boxes are going to go away and it's just going to be software and services. And the reason I say that is because before coming into the AV industry, I was in the IT industry. And so therefore, I've got some history to look at what actually happened there. And so it's a nonsense to suddenly say that everything's suddenly going to go software and everything's going to go service. Because if you look at the way that the IT industry evolved, there were many, many purpose-built appliances and boxes that performed a specific function that started to proliferate and actually had a huge growth and future at the same time when everyone was predicting everything was going to go to software and services. So I think we've got to be careful just not to suddenly think, you know, the box is dead and it's all going to go to a software platform, a services platform. I think the real issue is product versus platform, whether that's a hardware-based or a software-based or a services-based. What customers are actually looking for is a technology platform that they can actually invest in and actually develop around and becomes interoperable with all the other stuff they have. And quite frankly, that could be a box, it could be a piece of software, it could be, you know, a service. So I think it's platform is the most important issue. It's not, is it software, is it hardware, is it a service? It's, can I actually bet my business and bet that I'm actually going to get a great outcome over something that is actually going to scale with me, it's going to interoperate, it's going to make things easy, it's going to make things simpler than it actually has been before. I think the biggest issue we have in AV right now is we're building boxes for the sake of building boxes that don't actually serve a particular purpose. They just happen to be there when another way of doing it could be done much more effectively with a platform type solution. And we've still got too much of that stuff in AV.
You know, following up on that, Julian, and, you know, as well as TJ in the conversation of software application platforms, and we are going to talk a little bit about that, as well as some great conversation I had with TJ at Infocom about even talking about going beyond the box. But one piece of hardware right now that is in the spotlight is the Surface Hub. And we all saw the Surface Hub at Infocom. They rolled it in big time. It's being called a wall computer. All right. And I think somebody got very smart in giving it that that terminology. Because if you think about it, it really is. It runs on Windows 10. It has built-in Skype for Business. It does just about anything you need it to do. But it is a piece of hardware that's being sold. And there is strategy to it. Now, I think the bigger problem right now is if you essentially what we used to do on the grand scale was sell spec sheets. All right. And I think now we have to go way beyond the spec that's on a sheet and actually sell to purpose and purpose for the enterprise, purpose for education, purpose for you know, any market realm. And I think they have to look in that direction too as well.
Yeah, that's I think that's a tough thing, right? I mean, for an integrator to really understand it, their customer, and position the somewhat generalist technology like a Surface Hub, you know, or DSP or whatever it is that they're trying to go, you know, frankly, sell that end user on, I guess it is getting harder, I think, out there for the integrator to know how to position the same product they're positioning for one vertical market to position it in another one. So, you know, higher ed versus, let's say, a corporate boardroom, same technology for the most part, but just a different way of talking to the end user.
Well, I can talk with a certain amount of authority on this because Whitlock was actually selected to be one of the launch partners for Microsoft for Surface Hub. So we've been through the whole process of working with Microsoft to understand how we can actually bring that platform to market. The good news is that Microsoft actually selected the AV channel as the most appropriate channel to take this to market. It's a really important part of their strategy. They have not released it to the IT channel. The only authorized resellers are actually AV integrators right now, and it's a very small number. And so Microsoft actually recognized that this is not an appliance that you just stick on the wall and actually try and position it against another flat panel display or even another interactive display or a smart board. Fundamentally, the value proposition behind Surface Hub is actually a new collaboration proposition, which is fundamentally challenging the way that we've actually had meetings and the way we actually conduct a collaboration environment. And I think the most exciting thing about Surface Hub, and I think every single manufacturer in the AV industry should be thinking about what Microsoft have done with Surface Hub, is that what they've actually created is an application platform. Because Surface Hub is it's an endpoint, it's a you know, it's a display and it's interactive, but it's the applications you can actually put on Surface Hub. And it's the way that it actually delivers new levels of productivity and collaboration that's the exciting thing. And it's that deep level of integration with the same platform, the same OS, and the same platform that people are using in their everyday life in the work environment rather than having to learn a completely different process. So I think Surface Hub is huge, not just because of what it means as far as Microsoft's foray into the AV world. I think it's huge as far as what it's saying to all the AV manufacturers out there about what it is that customers are trying to do and how they're actually trying to do it and how your products need to become that similar kind of platform. And I think that's where the revenue is. That's where the deep levels of profit is actually going to come from. And that's why I said earlier, it's not, is it hardware, is it software, is it a service? Because Surface Hub is all three. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to start thinking about how you fuse together all aspects of the platform together. And it can be a piece of tin, it can be a software, and it can be a service all in there as well, all at the same time.
And you know, Julian, before our show that we did at Infocom, and Byron Tarry participated in the show, Byron and I had a conversation prior to the show, And the one thing we decided he would talk about was Microsoft and the Surface Hub. And of course, he is the president of the Global Presence Alliance. And we had a great conversation about it. We really did. And very insightful. And of course, last year, we all know what happened. Krista said we can't talk about football, soccer. We're going to put called football here.
Well, then I just get really excited and then I want to participate in the conversation.
Right. But anyway, we all know what happened last year. And okay, it happened. We moved on into Infocom this year and it turned into a very big thing. And I think it also became a great thing for any companies involved in the collaboration space. Because, you know, certainly there's greater notoriety to collaboration solutions as well now. And anybody who is getting in and ahead of the game with that and really, really making efforts, you know, with R&D and advancement and all, you know, they're also going to benefit too.
You know, I listened to a lot of the naysayers last year when Microsoft didn't launch. And I just try to remind everybody that a healthy Microsoft creates a healthy AV industry. And the reason being is if it wasn't for PowerPoint in the first place, there probably wouldn't have been much of an AV industry, quite frankly, as we've actually known it. You know, Microsoft just announced today that they're laying off 7,800 people. And again, there will be naysayers who are going, oh, Microsoft's in trouble. Microsoft are doing this. I think there's never been a more exciting time at Microsoft. They're actually getting their act together. They're very, very, very focused on what they need to do to make the organization fit for the way that the market is actually going. And I, you know, the reason I'm, you know, that I drove Whitlock to become a Microsoft Gold partner and to really invest in the Microsoft platform is because I genuinely believe that, you know, by working closely with Microsoft, we're going to unlock a huge amount of latent opportunity out there. And that's not to say other manufacturers and other platform vendors like Cisco aren't playing their part in that. But I think we have to accept that, you know, the kind of decision makers we're talking to as an integrator right now are the same decision makers that the folks at Cisco and Microsoft are talking to. And our job is to try and actually demonstrate how we are relevant to that discussion and what we do helps them to achieve their objectives rather than seeing us as a bunch of outsiders that are difficult to manage, that have crazy technology, that's proprietary, that is costly and complex. And I think, you know, if we have people in the AV industry who think that complexity is the secret sauce and complexity is the thing that actually holds their value, then that is backward thinking. And I think that
I was going to say that's the exact opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but there are people out there that will actually tell you. If I don't make it difficult, then I lose my value because my value is actually getting the customer, helping the customer to, for me to explain how difficult can be made easy. Well, screw that. Just focus on making it easy in the first place, and then you're actually going to get much better adoption across the enterprise, and that's where your value is.
Yeah, we see that in the manufacturer space even, you know, exhibited where, you know, there's always these, you know, networked audio wars, for example, or, you know, to me, it's like, again, coming from the IT perspective, it's, you know, IT just assumes that stuff runs on a network and frankly, a layer three network. They don't really care about our, you know, protocols and our, you know, AV specific little fiefdoms and protectionism that we generate. And I think that as a manufacturer, that's what I'm really striving to move beyond, you know, and the idea that Julian just put out there as far as, you know, the end user, they don't care about our technology. And that's kind of a hard pill to swallow sometimes. In fact, you know, I used to joke when I was an IT manager that, hell, I mean, if somebody wanted to give me a toaster that I had an RJ45 port on it, I would suddenly be responsible for managing it. And mm-hmm. that is somewhat the IT perspective on our AV stuff. It's why can't it just work? You know, why do I have to worry about it? You know, why can't you integrate with my platforms and my software? And why do I have to download the specific app or subscribe to yet another service-based app from you when I have, you know, IT standards tools I've invested millions of dollars in? Why can't you just make your stuff integrate and work at the software layer with that stuff? That those are sort of the attitudes that both I had as an end user, and also what I observe in talking to a lot of end users as a product manager.
Well, and it's also, why did you leave Telnet open and not put a password on your box?
Thank you. IT security is a completely overlooked aspect of everything we have. And, you know, Hope, I think, as again, looking at it from a manufacturer's perspective, the other interesting challenge is that many of us manufacturers have had platforms that weren't built from the ground up to be IT friendly. And I don't mean by that, I don't mean just network friendly, because for the last 10 years or more, that's all I've ever heard from the AV space is, oh, we have an RJ45 on our box. And it, you know, to me, that is that's a given. That's an assumption. And that's obvious. You know, now what? Now that you put that port on there, what about IT security? And what about the fact that I have all these other software and server-based platforms that would be valuable to integrate with your application? You know, so yeah, I'm with you.
Well, and it comes back to the original point of, you need integrators that see the bigger picture. So they have to understand how their equipment fits on the network, and also what are the vulnerabilities you may be introducing. You know, you can't have guys that just go and stick a WAP in the ceiling, which I've seen a lot of integrators do, because it makes their lives easier. You know, you need to play nicely with the corporate network.
I used to track those down with my scanning tools and go show up and scare people. Like, hi, I see a rogue WAP on my network, in my realm. What's going on? Did you plug that in?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And I think that there's also a commercial aspect to this as well, and I agree with everything that TJ said. Is that, you know, if you try as an integrator, if you try and actually make all of your money from one single transaction, in other words, you look at the profitability you're going to make on doing one project, you're not going to succeed in this world, because you have to take the long-term view, as Hope was saying. You have to actually treat a customer as a lifetime relationship and actually say, look, there is stuff I'm actually going to have to do to earn the trust and build that relationship with that customer. And I'm going to have to give some of that advice and some of those skills. I can't necessarily receive all of my value back just on that one single transaction. Because if you actually do engineer your business in a way that you look at that lifetime value, you can actually be delivering services that will carry on for months and years. You'll be getting additional advice and consulting stuff that will come off the back of this. And actually, if you look at your lifetime profitability from that customer, it'll be far greater than anything you did through accumulation of individual transactions. And so one of the challenges that we have in the AV industry right now, certainly in an integrator space, and I would also argue from a manufacturer's perspective, is we're still too transactionally driven. We try and look at, what's my percentage margin I'm selling on this box, or what's the percentage margin I'm selling on this project. What you have to do is actually say, what is the profitability I'm actually making from this customer over a period of time? And that fundamentally is the only way you can actually build that revenue stream of subscription-based services, managed services, and software and all that other stuff, and actually have a successful outcome. So I think this is not just about technology, it's also about business models as well. And that's one of the biggest challenges that faces most integrators.
Do you think that's because they don't understand the shifting buyer? Julian, is it in your experience, is it that it's easy to relate to an AV department when one existed, but now the AV department's been so integrated with the IT group that, you know, it's almost like a lot of folks are just at a loss. I mean, it seems like almost the transitional period that happened with my world of the past, of, you know, you had all the phonies, those that we used to joke around and call them the phonies. So those are the guys who would work with 110 and 66 blocks at an airport or wherever. And those folks were easy to talk to. They were gearheads. But then suddenly you get this sort of a suit, almost a business person who really thinks about ROI and total cost of ownership and all these other, you know, buzzwords. I mean, is that challenging for your sales team at Whitlock? Or, because I've heard that from others.
Yeah, I think that there's a number of problems. I mean, one of the fundamental problems is that we've grown this industry by a lot of owner-operated businesses, where, you know, there tends to be a view about how you make money. And that's been supported by the kind of sales models we've put out there, where we've actually recruited a lot of salespeople and we've tasked them to go out there and win projects. And we've basically paid them commission on maximizing the most amount of revenue per transaction. And that model still fundamentally exists in the whole of the AV industry. And I think it drives a certain kind of behavior that's actually quite difficult to unwind. You can't suddenly shift from that transactional mindset, which is sort of commission-based, to then actually say, you know, you're going to make your money over a 2 to 3 year period by actually developing that customer and growing that revenue. So I think that's one fundamental problem, that we're still too much driven by some of the sales behaviors that we still encourage. And so the IT industry, by the way, was exactly the same. It's not as if we haven't been here before. And I think we need to learn some of the lessons about some of the models and some of the methods that were actually deployed in the IT world to actually shift the attention towards a services-based model, a solutions-based model, that lifetime value. So this is work in progress. And I think the smart integrators and those that really have got the right kind of financial models in their business that can see and support the long game will all be trying to work on that and developing that kind of model moving forward. And if they can't, then they're going to be in trouble because there just aren't the margins in hardware anymore, or even selling software, quite frankly. There just aren't the margins anymore to continue to compete on that transactional mindset, because you'll go out of business before you know you realize it.
You know, to follow up on I'm sorry, go ahead, TJ.
I was going to say it's an interesting point Julian made in a more general sense, that we do have sort of this archetype or this pattern that we have laid down from the IT space that is about, I would guess, 10 years ahead of us, let's say, for a round number. I mean, so we do have some, not we can take everything from it, but we do have sort of a pattern to follow as a manufacturer or an integrator, I think. And we'd be wise to, I think, study our history, so to speak.
Hey, Julian, and one question I have to follow up to yours, and then we're actually going to move on to our next segment. But I had a situation. I had a meeting with an integrator a few months back, okay? I met with a vice president and a CEO. Now, companies like Whitlock and others who are not ahead of the game, but certainly far ahead of the game in terms of certain solutions. And, you know, I bring up video conferencing as a service as one. With anybody who is on top of those services and being able to supply those services for their clients are certainly ahead of the game versus, you know, what's out there in hardware and such. But, you know, what's interesting about the conversation is I had, it almost seemed to me like they were afraid to go outside of that, what you talked about 10 years ago realm, because they're thinking, at least from what I got from it, that their salespeople will not get it and they will not want to sell it. And that almost seems to me like one of the other symptoms of the industry is in terms of comfort zones. So how do you tell those executives to step outside of it at this point?
I tell you what, there's nothing more uncomfortable than not being able to make payroll or not actually getting a salary or getting fired. And I think that sometimes there is a time to be very explicit about what the challenges are and what the opportunities are, and rather than giving people lots of options. And I think sometimes we tread a little bit too softly in the AV industry. I think there are some hard realities ahead for all of us, but weighted against the hard realities are these huge opportunities. And I think one of our jobs as leaders is to be very explicit about what the realities are and also point out what the consequences are, but also to motivate and inspire our people about what the opportunities are and how everyone is actually going to be better off if we actually go to the great place and rather than trying to live in the old world. But it takes leadership and it takes strength. And so, if you have a business and you want to be dictated to by your salespeople, for example, and basically let them decide the direction of your business and let them decide what they are going to sell and what they're not going to sell, then quite frankly, you deserve everything that you're going to get. So you have to take command of the situation. You have to be, you have to look after the best people you have and you have to support them through that process. But you have to drive it and you have to drive it hard. We're certainly I'm not saying that we're necessarily have done it well every single time, but quite frankly, we're actually getting a lot more explicit and a lot more driven in going to that new model because we have to. It's not an option anymore. It's not something that is a nice to have. It's not an add-on. It's a little upsell or anything like that. Those days are over. We're now full on, and you have to embrace it.
So we have a rare kind of unicorn with us. We're full of unicorns here, but the Rich here, he's comes from an integrator side through managed services, yet he is on site as somewhat the end user every day. And I'm curious, Rich, since you work for a pharmaceutical company, how does the AV and IT departments work together there?
The IT group in general wants nothing to do with us. We struggled greatly to install Crestron Air Meteor as a two of them as a test unit, and got zero help setting it up from a network point of view. And it's a very simple install of a data jack, but there's also at least at my group or the facility I work at, I should say, a tendency not to experiment with any new technology. It's odd how they shy away from it, and we try and push it on little breadcrumb like items. Like the Crestron Air Meteor, super simple stuff, and it took us 6 months to get.
And I think that sometimes happens with a lot of customers too, in general. I mean, it's slowly becoming where they're talking, or the AV and IT is the same person, but I think it's still a slow adoption when the IT department is separate from AV to try to get them to work together to get the end user, who ultimately is some executive, to get them what they want for a system.
But I find it interesting because, Rick, you're in a market segment that is going through a huge amount of trauma right now. The pharmaceutical industry globally is going through a massive amount of change. And a lot of those pharmaceutical companies are breaking up their own infrastructures as organizations right now and fundamentally redesigning who they are and what they do. It doesn't surprise me because I know I've got direct experience of pharmaceutical companies. They've actually put a lot of this technology stuff on a slow burn at the moment while they sort themselves out from an organization perspective. But trust me, that will change because I don't see so many other industry segments who are probably not going through that same level of reorg and refocus. Really crunching on with the whole integration of AV into IT and really trying to make sure that becomes one. But I do know, having served many pharmaceutical companies, I know that they're probably not at the leading edge right now. I don't think it's through a lack of desire. I just think they've got other priorities.
Go ahead, Rich.
I was going to say, unfortunately, as a contractor, I catch a lot of information later when it's a little bit older. But I will agree with you on that point that they, due to the different acquisitions, it's sometimes there is a hodgepodge of formulas or policies going on. But some of the as the end user, like Krista introduced me as. Or a tech in the field, or at the location rather. It's interesting. It's kind of disappointing at times to see the pushback from the true user level. But
what will change? What will change? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the millennial generation and the way that millennials work in the workspace. And the fact is that the pharmaceutical industry desperately needs the best possible talent available, and that's going to come through that millennial generation. And if they're not providing the kind of technology that enables millennials to work in the way that they want to work, that becomes a fundamental business problem for them. So I certainly know of a number of smaller pharmaceutical companies that are adopting this technology in a big, big way because they see it as a clear differentiator. So, again, I think this is all good news for our industry, because I think we're now starting to see that this collaboration technology is now becoming mainstream and people are actually realizing that it can actually have really fundamental business effect. But different businesses are in different modes, and you know, I feel for you right now because I know there's a lot of soul searching going on in the pharma market right now.
Hey Chuck, what do you have for a power up?
Wait a minute.
What?
Chuck.
What? What?
Chuck. Power up.
Power up.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there looking at some network stuff, and I've been thinking about talking about networks on Power Up. But you know, something just struck me. And listening to Julian talk, Julian's a wealth of knowledge, his experience and his background. Like, seriously, you guys listening most of the time would have to pay hundreds of dollars to sit in a seminar and listen to him impart his knowledge. And what really is hitting me is the change in the industry. And I know we talk about, you know, AV and IT and IT and AV. And like Rich was saying, you know, the IT guys, they aren't liking us doing this. And I know at Infocom, we're offering a lot of network-based classes. There's a lot more network-based classes that are coming out. And all over, there's AV guys taking these network classes. And all I can think is, man, I hope the people listening will be the change, will actually be the change. We have a supreme advantage over the IT industry. We know AV. We're learning IT. They're going to have a hard road to catch up to us, because then when we know the IT industry, they're going to be leaps and bounds behind. I have eyeballs. They're analog. I have ear holes that are analog. People are still going to need speakers. They're still going to need displays. They're still going to need proper contrast ratio. They're still going to need proper screen size. But I'm going to know how to get it there over a wireless network. They're not going to know how to PagNag a room. AV guys, you need to be the change. You need to learn the networking. You need to learn the AV. Then when our businesses are successful and we're buying IT companies, we can look back and say, yeah, that convergence happened. Thanks a lot, cha-ching. Your AV power-up for this week is be the change.
Hey, Chuck.
Excellent.
You know, most IT, especially network engineers, aren't ever trained on real-time services on a network, which is, I've ran into this in yet another airport end customer that I had to parachute in on and help fix some problems with. It was a very large network, and these IT guys were quite frankly pretty arrogant. They thought they knew what quality of service meant and the requirements of it on a network. And it took bringing our folks in, including a couple of our engineers, to teach an IT manager how QoS affects real-time services on a network.
You know, TJ, I don't think I believe you that you had an IT person that was arrogant.
Yeah, you're totally making that up, TJ.
Yeah, I think we'll be leaps and bounds. The AV industry has the potential to be leaps and bounds because, I mean, we're so anal retentive about color and about sound. And you can have 10 different audio experts argue about the texture of a vibration. You know, what's going to happen when they get into the intricacies of the network where everything's solid? I mean, you can analyze everything in a network, the data streams, the bandwidth requirements. You know, you can analyze whatever the little packet's doing. And it's not an opinion like, oh, that sounds yellow. It's fact. And when you get these AV guys that are so used to these little minute details, making these minute details perfect, they're going to tear the IT guys a new one.
Once I don't know, Chuck. They won't be able to nut. They still won't buy your $10,000 speaker cables. I don't think they'll fall for that one.
Oh, man. There went that business model.
We sold tons of those back in my day.
Have you seen that stuff? Like, I once saw recently, actually, somebody sent it around the office. There were these speaker fuses you could put in your speaker that were made out of beeswax, and they supposedly warmed the sound. I'm not making this stuff up.
Well, is that the same place that was selling the cryogenically treated USB cables to make your audio transfers better.
it's the same company that sells gold-plated optical cables.
There you go.
Hey, Johnny, was that an early stuffer thing, Johnny?
Both?
Oh, good. Okay.
Oh, Johnny, well, you got to enlighten us stuffing things.
Johnny's taking notes for a new business.
Yes, he is.
Gold-plated optical everywhere. Woo!
Go ahead, Hope.
I was going to say, it's all converged because there's also places that make $10,000 Ethernet cables that are supposed to make your sound better. And they're directional. They tell you which side.
Directional.
They really are, because apparently they've never heard of full duplex.
Wow. Look at that.
Man, why do you have to say convergent, Hope? Man, we were like 55 minutes in.
I know, we were on a streak.
You're singing my tune. What can I say?
We converged this.
Little sweetness.
Was that a lead-in or something? I don't know. Am I supposed to converge this now?
No, I want to hear from Johnny. I want to hear some more stuff and things, and then we can go to you, Corey.
Perfect.
If you want to stop giving rides to people, or if you want people to stop asking you for rides, say yes the first time and just don't show up. That's a thing, not stuff.
How about some stuff?
That's a quality thing.
Come back to me on the stuff. That's all I got right now.
All right. While he thinks of some stuff, Corey, why don't you converge or divert or do whatever it is you have to do to us?
Would you like me to be disruptive?
Why don't you disrupt us?
I'll disrupt. Okay. Well, my first disruptive thought. Yeah, this is true. My first disruptive thought tonight is all week. I've been disrupting all week. Yeah, the blog is up, the disruptive top 10. Read it. It's wonderful solutions. Yeah, TJ, you kind of like that one too, huh?
Yeah, thanks for that.
You're very welcome. And to the other nine as well, you know, you're all great and deserve to be there. And there will be another top 10 next year. Looking forward to it. But my first thought tonight is, Someone very special is back with us tonight. She's been gone for quite some time. She's been going through house buying and selling and all kinds of fun stuff. But you know what? We're not whole without the wonderful Miss Stacy Kringlin, Vadio's finest. Stacy, it's so good seeing you again.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be back.
Mm-hmm. So you've got a house to live in and not a box now, right?
Right. Well, we were never living in a box. The fear was it was going to be my mother-in-law. I told Andy.
The box is sounding better every day.
Yeah, I know. I said, you want to see another anniversary, we better not have to do this.
Good move, Stacy. Good move.
Oh, boy. So the house is sold. Everything's great. Back to business and back to AV Power Up, because you've been missing, and you know, pink slips go in the mail when you miss too many shows, you know.
I know, I'm really sorry. No. I tried.
Yeah, he was talking about you firing him.
Yes. Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, I got out of control. It was bad.
I'm waiting for my pink slip.
I'm still upset that Rich didn't take my job opening.
Yeah.
I had Rich, to go and hire someone else.
You missed the opportunity, Rich.
Wait, we got one coming up. Hang on.
Wait a minute. Something good is coming. So anyway, to be convergent, divergent, and disruptive, tonight we are going to talk about software application platforms versus single application boxes. And you know what? Part of this discussion, thanks to my friends at Pivot Communications, Kristen Ray.
I did it again.
Ribbit.
Kristen Rector did post something great on Twitter and said it's not about the box, which TJ and I did talk about during Infocom when I did the interview at the QSC booth with TJ. Now, TJ and I did not know each other prior to that. You know, Jane Johnson, you know, she's told me some things. And said, yes, you definitely have to go over and see QSC. So the interview did happen. The interviews I did at Infocom I did one with a few people there. I said, I don't want to talk about the box. Okay, I want to talk about what you do. I want to talk about something that you feel stands out beyond the box. And so essentially what we did, we talked about software-based DSP. And again, it was a great interview, and we're going to talk more about this, as well as other software-based applications and platforms versus boxes or hardware-based, and even in UCC, which, you know, Julian will pick up on too. So, TJ, why don't you start that conversation?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, it isn't about the box, in my view, means that it's a platform. It's, you know, Julian said something about the Surface Hub that I think clicked for me in that it's a platform for applications. And that's how we're viewing our products. And I think you see that going on. And it is, it's not as overt, you know, you don't see the direct result physically many times, because as much as we say it's not about the box, you still need the box, right? You need something to host that application. But I think if you have a multi-targeted application, and targeted, I mean, it can run on any platform. The boxes can be multi-variable. It makes the integrator's life easier because it's a single training. It's a single application. They can use it as sort of a Swiss Army knife, as an example. And you know, I think that's where our world's going, instead of having to build something each and every time from the ground up. And from a manufacturer's perspective, that adds back margin. I mentioned that earlier in our talk, you know, the fact that we don't have to spend 2 years developing something from the ground up to come out with a new product means that we can innovate faster. We can give you more continuity between each product release, and it makes your lives easier because you don't have to think about, you know, retraining on some massive shift that we've created by generating a brand new platform each and every time we build a box.
It seems like our industry is kind of catching up with what, I don't know, phones are doing. I mean, think about when cell phones first came out. You made a phone call on this big Gigantor brick, and now most people don't need computers anymore because everything's in their phone. You have an app for whatever you need to do. You can surf the net on your phone. You can bank on your phone. I mean, it's a box. It's a multi-platform box, in essence.
That's what we're working on, Chuck. I mean, that's the idea. And, you know, I've been trying to sort of shift how we message and market our products, because it used to be QSC audio products. Now it's QSC systems for our systems business unit. And it's because it's about media. Very rarely now are, even if you think about files and formats out there that we all use every day, you know, Netflix and MP3s or video files, we don't think about separate audio and video media. We think of it as one holistic piece. And so, you know, once you move to a platform like Intel, for instance, or software as the primary value add, now you can talk about a wider spectrum, and it is about applications, and it doesn't limit you to one slice or one side of the equation, I guess.
Yeah, no, that, absolutely. And, you know, and again, Julian, you know, we talked a little while ago about this being, you know, UCC space also, where this is always big discussion, where you talk about hardware versus software, and you have your applications in cloud, VM. You know, I'm very well aware of what's out there, obviously, with Whitlock, the solutions that you have positioned. And you know what? Again, it's something where, and you know, I had an interview with Carol Zelkin of the IMCCA, and we talked about a lot of this as well. And, you know, it's just what it's grown into in terms of the software and VM applications now. The hardware still is out there. It's still meaningful. But, you know, there's the box, but this goes way beyond the box, too.
It does. But I think you have to actually understand, you know, the whole entirety of what's going on. Boxes are still really important. The issue is, where does the box actually sit? And so what you're actually seeing is that in the traditional video conferencing model, we basically put the infrastructure inside the customer's firewall and we put the box inside the meeting room. What's actually happening now through the need of scale, which is what's actually happening with unified communications now, we're moving from a paradigm where our design principle was based on how many meeting rooms do you have and what associated infrastructure do you need to have to support it. And so we could build that inside the firewall and actually host and manage it ourselves. And as a Navy industry, we supplied that to the customer. The reality is now, let's call it a global financial institution, might have had 800 meeting rooms. It now, through Microsoft Link or Skype for Business, has 125,000 users. And every single user, they expect to want to use video and want to use audio and presence and all the other aspects of UC. You cannot build that infrastructure inside your firewall to support that kind of user base. So the boxes move. It's not that the boxes disappear. The boxes actually then go to the service provider or go to the cloud managed services provider who are providing that through a soft client or through a service delivery. And they just move to different parts of the whole ecosystem. And some of that will move to a virtualized environment. So we're seeing a massive growth in virtualized infrastructure that sits on industry standard hardware. So as TJ was saying, the Intel-based platform sitting on a VMware or sort of virtualized environment. Because again, it's all about those requirements. Is how do I scale? How do I actually enable that always on capability, but that ability to scale up and scale down, because I can't actually predict what kind of user-based model I'm gonna have anymore. You know, we used to basically say, if I had 800 meeting rooms, I'd probably expect a 10% concurrency rate and I'd build an infrastructure that will support that model. You can't do that with UC, because users basically go and do the hell what they like, and they will actually surprise you every single time. You know, you can say, oh, only 10% of my users are gonna use video. No, they're not. 50% are going to use video, and that's going to probably grow to 70-80. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really fantastic opportunity right now. I think if you are a traditional tin-based infrastructure provider and a codec provider for meeting rooms, and the only value proposition you have is putting it through a channel that only knows how to sell to end users in conference rooms and what have you, you have big trouble. You have real trouble right now. And so that's one of the reasons why you've seen a certain amount of stagnation in the video conferencing market. If you look at Wayne House's numbers, no one's growing. You know, Cisco aren't growing, Polycom aren't growing, even room-based systems and infrastructure is not growing. But the use of video is going through the roof. And so you have to look at where that business is actually going. A lot of it's going into the service providers, a lot of it's going into the cloud providers. But I think a lot more customers are going to invest in virtualized environments, whether that be hybrid, some of it in-house and some of it hosted. But it's certainly going to be huge, huge deployments of video moving forward. And you only have to look at the stats. Yeah. You know, look at Microsoft stats around Skype and Skype for Business. You know, they're already seeing a huge uptick in video usage of Skype clients right now. It's massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm curious if any of the jobs that Rich was hinting at earlier have anything to do with any of these topics we're talking about. Oh, how about
mean,
it, Rich?
You mean UC?
Yeah. Are any of them UC hot jobs?
Oh, really?
Do you see hot jobs there?
This is more of my style stuff. Nice look, different locations though.
Is Rich going to take one of these jobs?
Well, I'm studying very hard for my CTS, which is now scheduled for August.
And 7th. You know what? You better take it, Rich, because I guarantee you are allowed to call me when I'm in Ireland when you pass.
All right, cool.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. We should all get together for a big party when Rich passes.
Yes, most definitely.
I don't care what time it is over there. You call me and tell me you pass.
Nice.
And when you pass, I'll join Krista in Ireland.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Oh, that road would be trip to Ireland.
I'll probably get your name as someone to call and congratulate you.
I'll drive. I'm gonna start off with the tip of the week. This is a very important tip of the week for those people who consider themselves project managers. Many employees are now employers are now asking for PMI. PMP certified project managers. If you want to remain competitive as well as continue to develop your skill set, it is worth looking into getting this certification. For more information, go to pmi.org. And that brings us to our our sponsor, Tier PM. I'm on their website right now, and I'm going to type in today's first hot job, 330, and that is AV installer, and that is a short-term contract located in Billings, Missouri, which is, I've Google mapped it, and it's about 9 hours from Minnetonka, where I can get those really cool shoes that they wear up there.
Minnetonka, Minnesota?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he could be a neighbor.
That's right. That's
what kind of shoes are those?
Those little boot leather
moccasins.
Get it
straight.
I'm from Brooklyn. We don't wear moccasins.
You can't say moccasins?
Well, back to my favorite job here. We have job 330. Opportunities are available for multiple AV installation technicians to work a short-term 1 to 2 month project starting in August 2015 on commercial integration project in Fishtail, Montana. I'm sorry, I said Missouri. I meant Montana.
Ishtail?
Fishtail.
Fishtail?
Fish. Yeah.
Fishtail?
Like Fishtail. Fishtail
a
car.
Like fish heads, but just, you know, tails.
It's a tail part.
The other end, yeah.
Okay.
And this is located in Montana. Housing, meals, transportation expenses will be provided to the qualified candidate. Candidates must have at least 1 to 2 years of experience installing audiovisual commercial integration solutions, including experience with cabling, wiring, racks, video screens, here's the word, Corey, projection units, speakers, video conferencing, smart boards, control systems such as Crestron and AMX.
Now, you know I have to be with you at the interview to say that, right?
That's correct.
So you point to me and I go, projection.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so that is job 330 located in Billings, Montana. And now we go back to my computer and we bring up job 331. Job 331 is an AV field engineer in Baltimore, Maryland. A lot of things going on in Baltimore, Maryland. This is good opportunities. This ideal candidate will have a minimum of 3 years of recent audiovisual customer service and support and troubleshooting experience on a diverse range of audio, video connectivity, and control system troubleshooting. Must have experience troubleshooting and configuring Extron, Crestron, AMX, and here's all those other names that we mentioned a few minutes ago, Polycom, Cisco, Biamp, and Clear One equipment.
So you see, you see.
Mm-hmm. I see.
I see, you see.
You see, you see?
I see.
I think Julian sees you see too.
All right. Excellent. That is job 331, AV field engineer in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, as soon as I get my CTS, I'm going to ask Marinka to hold on to this job for me.
But, how many jobs do you want them to hold on to, Rich?
All the jobs.
Listen, I'm a hardworking
You're
guy.
You're reading these jobs it. For others to apply to, but now you want all of them.
No.
She's going to collect them like Pokemon.
Or my Walking Dead bobbleheads.
Oh. Yeah, Rich has got Walking Dead bobbleheads behind him.
Everybody else has props, so I must have one or two.
Well, okay. You have your prop. That's cool.
My house is kind of boring. But anyway.
Don't tell us.
Job number 332. This is AV field service technician located in Philadelphia area. This ideal candidate will have a minimum of 3 years AV customer service, support, and troubleshooting experience. Must have experience configuring, testing, Q&A, and troubleshooting a diverse range of audio, video, connectivity, and control system devices. Candidates must be able to assist in system design and installation when needed. Here's my part. Candidates with CTS, Extron, Crestron, and or AMX certifications are preferred. And that is job 332.
I've got an idea for you, Rich. So Hope helps you pass the CTS, and then she teaches you how to be a programmer.
I took a Visual Basic programming course a couple of years ago and loved it. Oh, unfortunately, boy. I really wasn't good at it, but I loved it nonetheless.
Now, you're not supposed to admit that, you know.
Listen, my faults are right out here, so I can get past them right away.
We have a lot of work to do for you, Rich.
Absolutely right.
So is that it, Rich?
That is it
for hot jobs?
That is it today. Hot that jobs. Is job 332, AV field service technician in Philadelphia.
And awesome. Did we mention that's Tier PM, tierpm.com. Look them up. Plug in the hot jobs and more, and you can get a great job through Tier PM.
That's a great website.
So I have a special announcement to make, and that would be that Stacy's daughter, Natalie, has a birthday this week.
Hey! Woo! How old is Natalie?
How old are you going to be?
Seven.
Whoa!
Wow, that many, right?
Does she work at Bonio yet?
That many?
She has helped out before. I've had her in the office for a couple hours. Mostly she just distracts everybody.
Oh,
perfect.
I think she took a job that Rich didn't want.
We see this as a future woman in AV, Julian.
That's right. That's right.
Don't let her fool you. I saw her with a soldering iron.
Oh, that's Jeremy's daughter saying happy birthday.
Thank you.
Wow. So our guests, you're welcome to say happy birthday to Natalie.
We should all sing and see if the auto mix works.
Oh, my gosh. This could be utterly horrible.
Whoever's the loudest will be the only one singing.
That won't be me.
Somehow I think it will.
Julian, any special thoughts for Natalie?
I could sing happy birthday, but I'm not sure that's probably a good idea.
I don't know if we want to go there or not. Hey, listen, I'll take consensus vote on that. You know?
Happy birthday, Natalie.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Natalie.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Natalie, should I tell you happy birthday in German?
Yeah.
All right. Alles Gute.
That's in German. You don't know German.
No. I'll teach you one day.
Remember that on Friday and yell it when everybody sings happy birthday. Say, alles Gute.
Or you could say, joyeux anniversaire.
That's good.
What's that?
Okay.
Yeah,
good day in French.
En français. Okay.
Is it me or do these two little blonde girls look surprisingly alike?
That's a secret for next week's show.
Only in that they might be the next future leaders of our industry.
I was going to say, Natalie, would you like to join our CTS study group?
That's that test I studied for when I made everyone leave me alone.
Can we teach you Ohm's Law?
Ohm's Law.
You can teach me Ohm's Law.
Who will get it first?
We're working on multiplication right now. I don't think she's quite ready for Ohm's Law.
Who will get Ohm's Law first, Natalie or Rich?
Natalie. My bet's on Natalie.
No, I'm still looking at multiplication. Too.
That could be a new segment in the show.
Oh, you think so?
Natalie or Rich?
Mm-hmm.
No. We don't play games anymore.
No.
All right, well, happy birthday. Happy birthday, Natalie.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so now it's the sad part of the show where I have to say goodbye to everybody.
Why do we have to do this?
I don't know. Well, if I don't say goodbye, then nobody will miss me. So I need for them to miss me.
Oh, you want everybody to miss you and like wait for next time so they can hear Krista's voice again?
Yes.
Oh.
So thank you very much, TJ Adams, and thank you very much, Julian Phillips. I really enjoyed the discussions that both of you brought to the show tonight.
Glad to be here. Thank you for inviting us on.
Great fun. Thank you very much indeed. And I'm just watching Natalie doing cartwheels right now. That's made my day.
It's been a long time since we've seen Natalie do cartwheels.
She wanted to show off her gymnastics moves.
the best thing though is the chat window, guys. You guys, I should save this and post it on Facebook.
Oh god,
no. You should. It would really, really bring listeners to this show if you did something like that.
Yeah.
Julian, have you seen all this stuff? I mean, these guys are crazy people.
Yep, that's us.
Yeah, the chat is the other fun part of this show if you ever look at it, because you'll see what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh boy. I don't know. I don't want to end it, Krista, but I know we have to.
Yeah, we have to. So I'm gonna start to end it and you're gonna interrupt me and that's how it goes.
No, I promise.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of his jam.
I know, it's what he does. So on behalf of Stacy, super gymnastic mom, Kringlin.
She's back.
I told you.
Yeah, Corey, I know.
On behalf of Hope, I'm on vacay with some gin and tonics, Roth.
Rock it, Hope.
You know it was vodka. Come on.
Yeah, we know.
On behalf of Jeremy, I'm going to so see the Minions movie this weekend, Caldera.
Tell us all about it next week.
Well, I will.
On behalf of Johnny, stuffing things, Moda. On behalf of...
Wait.
Whoa.
That's it? He's stuffing things? That's it?
Yeah, he's stuffing things. He's electric Jesus.
He is electric Jesus. This is true.
Yes.
Thank I'll take
you.
It.
On behalf of Chuck, the mad sound guy, Espinoza.
And there's a little one. What do you know? We got
and it's
one.
A little mad sound guy.
Yeah.
Mad
sound, the little man sound.
Aw. Yeah. On behalf of Rich Ranger Rick Prevetti.
get a job already, Rich, would you?
On behalf of Corey, I can't stop interrupting Krista Moss.
That's too long for that. We have to come up with something else, okay?
Krista Moss, oh my God.
Oh, don't ever say Krista Moss
really?
Again.
Really? You
said it first. Come on.
All right, guys, we have to stop the show and do it again. That cannot publish.
No, that, oh man. And on behalf of me, whatever you want to put from my middle name, Bender. Thank
Send
you.
Send suggestions.
So yes, I'll take any suggestions. Thank you for listening to AV Power Up.
And for me, Corey Moss, I would like to thank my guests, I'm very possessive now. Thank our guests again, Julian Phillips and TJ Adams. Thank everybody who is on the show and listening out there. And we'll see you next time.